This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by two brilliant leaders. We're speaking today about operational improvement with Amy Kate Uvelt, the Vice President of Performance Excellence at Baptist Health, and Sanjeev Agrawal, the President and Chief Operating Officer of Leantas. We're going to talk about some of the performance improvement efforts at Baptist Health Jacksonville, plus some of the work that Leantas has done with Baptist Health Jacksonville and with Amy. Amy, by background, has been the Vice President of Performance Excellence at Baptist Health Jacksonville since October 2016. She also worked at Baptist from 2008 to 2014, initially as the Director of Operational Improvement, Performance Improvement, then as a System Patient Experience Officer. In between that, she worked in Denver, Colorado, leading performance improvement with HCA. Previously, she was the Vice President of Quality and Patient Safety with Baptist Healthcare at Pensacola. She's also led operational improvement departments at Spectrum Health in Grand Rapids and at Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville. So she has just magnificent experience in operational improvement and performance improvement. So a great leader. We're also joined today by Sanjeev Agrawal, President and Chief Operating Officer of Leantas. Sanjeev, who's brilliant, serves as the President and Chief Operating Officer for Leantas, and he's co-author of the book, Better Health Care Through Math. Leantas works with 103 healthcare systems, including 45 that deployed the IQ tools across our 2,500 operating rooms with tremendous success. Before Leantas, Sanjeev was Google's first head of product marketing and led three different successful startups. He was the CEO at Eloqua, acquired by Motorola, the VP products and marketing at Tell Me Networks, acquired by Microsoft, and founder and CEO at CollegeFeed, acquired by After College, a brilliant leader. By background, Sanjeev graduated with a BS and MS degrees in electrical engineering at MIT and computer sciences, started his career at McKinsey and Cisco Systems before joining Google. He's been named by Becker's Healthcare as one of the top entrepreneurs innovating in healthcare. Let me just, in your own words, and without redoing the bios and so forth, Amy Kate, let me ask you to just take a moment to introduce yourself to the audience, and Sanjeev, the same. Amy Kate, do you mind just taking a moment?
Yes. Hello, Scott, and hello, everyone. Amy Uvelt, happy to be here with you today. I've got about 20 years of experience in working in healthcare across the United States and worked in manufacturing before that, and I just absolutely love being able to help people who take care of people who are ill to make processes more patient-centered, more team member-centered, and just happy to be here today to talk with you about the things we've been able to do partnering with IQ and Leantas.
Thank you so much. And Sanjeev, could you take one moment and introduce yourself as well?
Sure. Thanks, Scott. It's great to be here and be here with Amy. For me and for Leantas, it's a privilege to be able to work with healthcare systems like Baptist Jacksonville on what is probably one of the top three issues, which is access to good healthcare for all. And so that's a big and important thing that we need to make happen for our generation and every generation to come. So thanks for having me.
Thank you very, very much. And we're going to talk a lot about Baptist Health's efforts around operational performance improvement. And Sanjeev's going to add his commentary and thoughts as well. And between the two, we'll get brilliant perspective. Amy, take a moment and talk a little bit about the operational and performance improvement team at Baptist Health, including sort of the philosophy, organizational strategy, and goals, and talk a little bit about that, maybe what leads your team to take ownership and drive success. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, operational performance improvement is a department of internal consultants that was started about 15 years ago at Baptist. We had a history of really focusing on patient quality, and our COO at the time wanted us to shift into, you know, the same excellence in operations. And so we started as a small group of three who really focused on Lean and Six Sigma methodologies, and we still continue with that. Our department has waxed and waned over the years from that small group of three to as many as eight. We're currently at six. And we just partner with, I don't think there is a department in the organization, and we're both inpatient, outpatient, that we haven't been able to work on their processes. And really the focus is to just drive and be more, and this is kind of our tagline, effective, efficient, and consistent processes. And we do that through collaboration, coordination, and communication. Our goal is to work with teams to solve their problems and identify best practices and then leverage those across the system and do it with data. Whenever we start a project, we're like, okay, how are we going to know if we come in and work with this team that we've made a difference that is better, not just different? And so we're always driving to data, monitoring and following up, making sure that we've achieved the results that we set out to or tweak it if we haven't. And really, ultimately, we want every team member at Baptist to be thinking, okay, how can we make this better? And just have that constant improvement mentality and mindset, whether it's better for the patients, better for them and their workday, or better for the business and finance. And the way we're structured, I'm the vice president of performance excellence, and I've got a couple other areas that I work with, but OPI has a director. And again, we have, you know, anywhere from two to six or eight folks that report into that director role. And we report into the chief operating officer and executive vice president for the entire system, who reports to the CEO. So we are plugged in strategically, making sure that we're working on what's most important for Baptist to provide the best care and service in our community for our patients.
Fantastic. And Sanjeev, take a moment on why it's so important for health systems themselves to be so focused on operational improvement and to make it a structured and systematic effort. Can you give us a few thoughts there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'll just pick one specific area, although there are many reasons, and that has to do with the ability to provide care and improve access. You know, if you think about Baptist Jacksonville with 74 ORs and many other health systems, and that's a large system, but we work with systems of all sizes, small systems with 20 or 25 ORs to large ones with 600 of them. Think about what it takes to, from a patient perspective, to get scheduled for a surgery that I might need. You know, I go to my surgeon's office, get a clinic appointment, and then I might need to get some testing done in order to confirm that I do need, say, my knees replaced. And everything between me realizing I need some help to actually getting my surgery done and then recovering at home can take months. And this situation is only going to get worse with the fact that we have an aging population and a growing population that needs more and more medical care. And so operational improvement is just fundamental. It's not a luxury to be able to say, how can we do more with less? How can we use our ORs? How can we use our infusion chairs? How can we use our inpatient capacity without continuously having to build more? You know, 5,000 hospitals in this country, each one of them has spent, you know, $300 to $400 million in capital expenses. That's $2 trillion of capital that has been put in the ground. And unless we are highly operationally efficient with the use of those $2 trillion, there's not that much money left in the system to keep building more. So this is just one of the reasons why operational excellence in the usage of key assets, physical assets, is so key.
Thank you very, very much. And Amy Kay, let me come back to you on Baptist Health has done a lot of work internally and externally to support innovation. Can you talk about sort of how you decide to move forward with and evaluate external partnerships, and a little bit about the collaboration opportunity that Baptist Health saw with LeanTOS and what you see there and sort of the innovation side and so forth?
Sure, Scott. Baptist, you know, always is looking for a new and better way to bring value and help to our community. And so when leaders or team members hear of an external, you know, vendor, partner, technology, we vet it with the appropriate stakeholders. And if there are no competing, you know, initiatives or things that would prohibit that, we have an analytic steering committee who reviews these types of things. And it's made up of key leaders from operations, IT, finance, strategic sourcing, quality, and the group reviews and vets these possibilities. And LeanTOS, for example, we had been working with them in our infusion center space and had seen the transformation they were able to bring about there, and had heard about the solutions with IQ in the OR. And every hospital wants to maximize their operating rooms. It's precious minutes that can do so much good and also drive so much revenue. And we had opportunities and challenges in terms of new surgeons wanting to get access, but we had block time that had been set for years and years and years, and it's hard to change things sometimes. And the data was very difficult to get. We have ORs across the system, across different hospitals, ambulatory surgery centers, and because it was complex, depending on who might pull it, the data may look a little different one day than the next, which led to maybe lack of trust, and it took a lot of time to get. So we just had a lot of issues with the data, and like, wow, if LeanPos was able to make the transformation in our infusion center, and they can even do a fraction of that to our ORs, we need to investigate this. So we got connected with Sanjeev, and his amazing team came in, shared with us what they can do, and we affectionately marketed it, unfortunately, as open table for the ORs, but that connected with folks, and that kind of made the lights come on. Yeah, it really did. And so the surgeons that had block for years, we were able to explain to them that they could still, keep the time that they needed, but release it to those new surgeons who may or may not have been in their practice, but definitely want to give these new surgeons time. And it did take some change management, but partnering with LeanPos, we're able to come in and just do some amazing transformations for us.
Thank you very, very much. Amy's going to talk in a moment about persuading leaders that predictive and prescriptive analytics was the right way to improve utilization and capacity challenges and how that worked. Sanjeev, before Amy gets started on that, talk about why, and you're an expert in this, computer science, electrical engineering, MIT, using math to improve healthcare. Talk about why predictive analytics and prescriptive analytics is so important to doing this and to helping to utilize the, literally, you said hundreds of millions, I'll up you and say billions of dollars that health systems have in assets. Why is it so important to use predictive and prescriptive analytics to steer the ship better? Can you talk about that, Sam?
Sure. And it's no different, Scott, in a hospital environment as it is in, say, airlines or in transportation or package shipping or even in consumer goods. Remember the time when we used to all travel with paper maps? I was driving from, say, Tampa to Atlanta. The best I could do 30 years ago was go with a paper map or ask friends of mine how much time it had taken them to travel. Now, I just go onto my Google Maps and I type in, I'm going from point A to point B, and it predicts how long it's going to take. And it's usually reasonably accurate, barring unforeseen things like accidents. If you think about airlines, any one of 300 million Americans could get up on any day and say, I want to go from airport A to airport 20,000 minus A because there's 20,000 airports in this country. That's a lot of possibilities. And yet I don't remember the last time I couldn't fly from point A to point B. And that's all done through predictive and prescriptive analytics.
In the case of Baptist Health, we have to give a huge shout out to the leadership team there, including Amy herself, Aaron Meary, who is the chief digital officer, and Ms. Thomas, for example, who is one of the CEOs at Baptist Health South, which is one of the Baptist Jacksonville hospitals we work with.
This realization that analytics is not about admiring historical problems by looking at historical data only is not something that has still taken foot in healthcare nearly as much as we'd like it to, meaning that when we talk about analytics, most people talk about reports. Most people talk about Tableau, and most people talk about what happened yesterday, which is sort of like you reading yesterday's newspaper or looking at yesterday's weather report. It's interesting that it rained yesterday. What I really want to know is it going to rain tomorrow? And then I have the option of either taking an umbrella or staying home or getting wet. If you think about the OR, for example, focusing on block utilization yesterday, and even that we have debates around the validity of the data, or what first case delays were, or what turnover time was. These are inherently not useful things, because what are you going to do about turnover time yesterday? But if we can predict which block owner, to Amy's earlier point, is not going to use their block 14 days from now, and get them to actually release it to their colleagues or people outside their department, and then get other people to use it, in an open table-like format. That's useful. Because wringing our hands and being unhappy about yesterday's metrics doesn't help anybody. And that's just one example. There are dozens of other examples. So I'll give you just one more. Staffing. You know, looking at historical volume data is not nearly as useful as being able to have a decent prediction on what volume is going to be like in the future. Because then you can actually do something with the limited staff you have. You know, knowing that yesterday I had 42 cases and I only had staff for 38 is terrible. And that was a bad day. But until I can reasonably predict what life is going to look like in the future, there isn't much I can do today. So predictive and prescriptive analytics is really about actionability of the data and not just what I call admiring the problems of the past.
And Amy, let me ask you to take off on the same question. I'll just give you one different take on it. There's been so much discussion of predictive analytics over the last 10, 15 years or so. And just more recently that people have really realized the benefit of it in a lot of situations in healthcare. How did you, with your team, build the business case for predictive analytics and prescriptive analytics? And were the results and the return on investment in making these efforts what you had expected?
Absolutely, Scott. I'm going to go ahead and just steal the punchline and say yes, the investment was worth it and even better than we had conservatively estimated. But back to the first part of your question, how did we get the buy-in? Our leaders knew that things had to change. Status quo was no longer acceptable. We could not continue to turn surgeons away from the operating room when our overall prime time utilization was in the low 40%. Like that's not acceptable. And when demand is there for new, you know, more ORs, more robots, we don't have the real estate, capital is tight, something had to change. And unfortunately, we've got, you know, forward thinkers as leaders. And so we've been talking about predictive analytics and prescriptive analytics for some time. And then when we had, you know, came across LeanTOS, it seemed like a perfect fit. So the pain was enough to give us the courage to make the leap. Sanjeev and his team did an amazing job showing to us the possibilities. And we were able to work with finance, who is awesome. They are very conservative. And so we took some of the potential results that we saw with Sanjeev's team, put a slight, you know, filter for, okay, maybe we're not going to be as successful, or maybe we're not going to be able to move some of those tough surgeons who've been here, you know, since the doors opened almost. What might a more realistic possibility look like? And then it's honestly quite easy to put the business case together because, you know, if you know what your expenses are and you know what your revenue to come up with the margins per minute, and we just apply that. If we go from X utilization to Y, what does that look like? And we have far exceeded what our results would be. And that's even during, like, we implemented at our first hospital, our quote-unquote pilot, we love to pilot, was at one of our adult hospitals in October of 2019. We still rolled out during 2020, which I'm sure everyone remembers what happened during 2020. We had COVID. We had actually several surges that impacted our elected cases, and we were still able to see an increase in block utilization minutes. We didn't go and try to recalculate and mess with the numbers to say, oh, well, we won't really open these days and those days, because every OR suite was different during the COVID time based on their population. But we've, you know, still yet seen tremendous improvement, even when our ORs were shut down during a big piece of the year.
Thank you. And it's actually a brilliant perspective of sort of this mix of, there's enough pain in management of all these assets that people were open to it. You had a financial team that's both conservative but supportive and open to it, with open minds to it, and then had relatively early on success with it, which leads to more success. And that's a great prescription for people taking on new ideas and being willing to innovate and try new things. So just fantastic. Let me ask you a follow-up question to that, Amy. And Sanjeev, I'll ask you a similar question. How does Baptist Health build a culture that supports this open-mindedness to change innovation while constantly also pursuing, you know, the efficiencies that are so important today in open and transparency? So how do you encourage that culture of not everybody saying no, but being open to things, you know, where there's an opportunity to make serious improvements? How do you pursue that culture?
It really starts with our executive leadership. You've got to have it at the top to make it safe as you flow through the layers of the organization, and making it safe to try new things. You know, innovation can be fun and exciting and usually successful, like it has been for us in our OR space with LeanTOS, but it isn't always, and you've got to make it safe to fail. And you want to also have your processes so you can fail fast and learn and try something new. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, we pilot everything. That's kind of, the safe way to start. You're not going to go across 13,000 team members or five hospitals to do something. You know, pick a place where the pain is bad or where the leadership is visionary and try it. And then that success can, you know, just breed more enthusiasm to carry it out throughout the rest of the organization and give leadership that competence and vision that it's going to be able to be successful in other places if you were able to do it in one. So I think piloting small and making it safe to fail and having leaders that that are okay with that, that, you know, inspire innovation and encourage and reward it.
Thank you so much. And we're going to recapture some of those thoughts in a moment as well when we talk about lessons learned in scaling technology. Sanjeev, let me ask you this question, because you've had this brilliant career both with startups at McKinsey, sort of the world's probably highest end, wellest thought of consulting firm. You've also worked at Google, which is no slouch as well, a magnificent innovation culture and leader. How do you build systems or cultures that support innovation? How do you sort of make that part of the fabric of a company and its culture?
You know, I think Amy said probably said the most important part of it, which is it starts at the top with a leadership that just doesn't talk about innovation, but actually supports it and treats every experiment as a way to learn what works and what doesn't work. And that's easier said than done, especially in the more conservative industries like healthcare. Failures are not often looked at as learning opportunities. They're often looked at as, hey, I told you so, don't try new things. The other things I would say, just again, to go back to what Amy was saying, you know, one thing remarkable about Baptist in my experience has been, we never heard once that this wasn't invented here. We never heard once, oh, we spend so much money on our EHR and our EHR can do this. We never heard once, and I'll just go out on a limb and say that oftentimes process improvement teams can view new tools and technologies as almost threatening. Because with all due respect, a lot of the more traditional Lean Six Sigma shops are, you know, they would prefer to keep it simple on the backs of Excel spreadsheets as opposed to any of this newfalutin stuff with predictive and prescriptive analytics. And it's remarkable the ability to embrace a new way of doing things requires courage. It requires saying, a lot of hospitals have pain. A lot of hospitals have the same situation that Baptist did in 2018 when we met them. But not everybody is willing to say, you know, what I did in the past isn't going to work anymore. Excel is middle school math, and that's why I'm getting middle school results. Let me actually partner with someone that seems like they know what they're doing. And then let me provide them the guidance and the true sense of collaboration to be successful. Because no vendor from the outside is going to be able to come in if you don't have intent. So just to, you know, back up what Amy said, from a leadership and governance perspective, from a support and collaboration and a true sense of a joint mission. And a lot of people talk about that, but this fear of failure, this fear of, you know, not invented here, being willing to say, yeah, just because our schedulers always did this doesn't mean it was the right thing. It'll take some change management, but we're willing to commit to it. And we expect this from our vendor partners, you know, holding each other to a high bar for performance and delivery. So those would be the other things I would just add to that.
Thank you very, very much. It's a fascinating perspective from both of you. I'm going to ask you each a final question. And the final question is going to be sort of lessons learned in scaling disruptive technology? Because this is a big issue. If you take a piece of technology, but you can't scale the health system, it's got very limited value. So a couple lessons, I'm going to ask each of you for just a couple lessons that you would give people on trying to scale important and key technology in a health system. Sanjeev, let me start this one with you and let Amy back clean up here. A couple thoughts you have on things you've seen work well or lessons you've learned in how people could scale disruptive technology.
Yeah, so I think the technology is just one pillar. And like we all know, people and process being the others, where we've talked a fair bit about the engagement from top leadership on important issues. But let me start with the technology itself. So I think this notion of scaling is not very well understood. I know many health systems where they'll have one department or a group of anesthesiologists or a group of people that are technology savvy end up building an application or building a report or building a departmental Tableau thing. And knowing the difference between that and a piece of software that scales across the system where hundreds of people are using it every day, that's maintained, where new innovation can happen, where there is an entire team, requires understanding that this stuff is not easy. Just the technology piece itself requires tens of millions of dollars to actually put in place. And just to give you our example, we've raised over $300 million over the course of our company. On the OR product alone, we probably have spent over $50 million just developing and improving the product. Now, that's because scaling software in the cloud or even on-prem or however you choose to do it, only 10% of it is really the upfront cost of building a report or building the software itself. 90% is in the long tail of actually maintaining it, upgrading it. So IQ today looks nothing like what it did when we started, even with Baptist, because Baptist has pushed us to do interesting things like case scheduling and to push us to do better at everything we do. Now, the other two pieces have to do with, okay, you've got a scalable piece of software and you want people to use it. Well, you need to start by, to Amy's point, showing success and making sure that all the users, A, it's easy to use, B, the benefit is obvious. Because look, nobody likes change. I can't even get up half an hour earlier in the morning unless there's a compelling reason to. So making sure that there is a compelling reason for all the stakeholders, be they physicians, be they surgical services leadership, be they senior leadership, to understand the why and to constantly reinforce that with results. So if you can create a virtuous cycle of people understanding that there is value in doing things differently and seeing the value, then you get to the process piece of, yeah, I used to, you know, before OpenTable existed, we all called restaurants one by one. You know, travel agents are no longer a thing for the most part because we all go on Kayak. The reason we chose to get away from our favorite travel agent, despite our relationships, and the reason we chose to, you know, use OpenTable was the value was there. We loved it. And so when you make delightful software products where the value is obvious to users, you actually can scale it, train them, bring them along in partnership with health systems. It's a lot easier than either throwing technology over the wall or, you know, being cheap about how much investment you can make. So that's maybe perhaps a technology-centric view of the world, but those are some of the lessons that I would say we've learned.
But it's actually, I get three or four great thoughts out of that. It's great technology coupled with constant improvement. It's got to be constantly put the resources into improve it. And you had said when you started it, it's one thing. By the time you're a few years into it, it's got to be constantly improved. That's why the great tech companies keep on getting better and better. Second, there's got to be a compelling reason to use it. It really fits a need. It's not just something thrown over the wall. It really fits a need. And then third is it's got to work. People got to get great results from it. Now, I happen to be an Expedia user versus a Kayak user, but you're absolutely right on how it's completely replaced the use of the travel agent, and can't even tell you how right you are on the open table thing and everything else as well. It's really a great, great perspective. Amy, from your perspective, because you've scaled technology at a couple different systems now, and it's a fascinating effort, and it used to be so hard to convince people to scale it, and it still is, because you have to get users on board with, oh my goodness, we're making this change. Every time there's a change, there's some friction, some challenges, and to send the message. It's a long-term working process. It's not just complete on day one, but it's got to be good enough on day one. Amy, give us some thoughts and lessons you've learned in scaling technology at health systems.
Absolutely, and it's kind of funny, Scott, because it's not the techie piece that makes or breaks it most of the time. It's the psychology, the change management. It's getting the people on board and, you know, start early. You got to communicate the why with anybody who might be affected. And it really takes some brainstorming. Like, you can think of the obvious folks, but then think of the downstream. Who are the next touches further and make sure you include them, because you don't always know what you don't know. And, you know, get their input, get their buy-in, hear their concerns. I mean, listening is such a big part of the front end, understanding what their pain points are. And if they don't think the technology will fit or work, figure out why. And maybe that's not the right fit. And if it is, you know, keep them, you know, informed all along the way. You know, again, as you know, you start with a pilot, let them know how things are going. If they've got issues with, you know, functionality or timing that they can't go live, you know, for whatever reason at a certain time, listen to that, because, you know, bulldozers might flatten things, but there's not a lot that usually comes along with them. So, you know, just listening, keeping informed, demonstrating the results, and also being real. If something doesn't work, you know, it's okay to abandon it and move on. Don't keep, you know, pushing the needle if it's not making a difference. And just really sharing those successes, listening, and that's just going to generate buy-in and enthusiasm. And by the time it's ready to roll out, if you've been able to really solve the problem, usually they're hungry for it and asking, when can you get it here quicker? The other people side, I would say, is it's really important to provide resources. So like OPI or IT or a combination of the two really needs to be able to be there. And you can't count on operations to have the bandwidth all the time. Some may, but you know, we've been so busy. You know, our house is like 90%+ full, and even more some days. So you can't count on a nurse leader to implement technology. You need to come along and support them with the project management, with, you know, managing the task list. So I think that's also really important for that scale up.
But you said a couple things that I think are so important. I'll touch on the last one first. This concept of you better have support behind it, because there's nothing more frustrating than getting people to adopt new technology and not getting the support to work through all the implementation things, the kinks, the challenges, the learning how to use it, stuff like that. So there better be really readily available support for it. And then this concept of if you try the bulldozer approach, this may work in the short run, but it's usually a very short run solution, because it almost never really works in the long run and keeping people on board with it and excited about it and so forth. And there's a fine line between having to force adaptation of certain things, but in general, the bulldozer approach versus the listening, cajoling, moving along is generally not the right approach. What a fascinating perspective. Just fascinating, Amy. I want to thank Amy K. Ehrvald, Baptist Health Jacksonville, Sanjeev Agrawal, Chief Operating Officer and President of LeanTOS. Both brilliant discussion today on operational improvement, performance improvement, so important and such a constant focus. It's really amazing what Baptist Health has done, Baptist Health Jacksonville, on this sort of very core performance improvement team that works throughout their system. They're constantly trying to make improvements and work with their entire system to make improvements. And the work that Sanjeev has done and that LeanTOS has done is legendary, remarkable what they've done. And the number that was put into that, $300 million to invest in and build software, just an amazing expenditure to try and build greatness. Thank you both for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Always a pleasure to visit with both of you. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Sanjeev.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Amy. Thanks for having us.